hello, everybody, and welcome back to an awesome episode of the Research VR podcast. Today with me are special guests, David Sarno.
How you doing, Oz? The Wizard of Oz.
I'm doing very well. Yeah. Founder of Lighthouse Inc. And Dr. David Axelrod, who is also from this. Give us your introduction, I guess. I don't want to.
Sure. I'm David Axelrod. I'm a pediatric cardiologist from Stanford, and I work with David at Lighthouse.
All right. Awesome. Well, so what does VR have to do in hospitals? Why would why does that make sense? I guess you can kind of talk about how you got the idea at first and what's the inspiration behind.
Well, we've been working using, before VR, 3D graphics, video game graphics,
okay,
to explain parts of reality for a few years. And we often kind of say that, you know, so much of the technology that we use was pioneered by the video game industry and the animated film industry.
Right.
And these are so often used to tell, you know, stories of alien wars and ancient battles and, you know, just all kinds of different fictional stories. But there are so many stories in real reality that have their own, you know, miraculous, mystifying amazement. And so we've been just using the tools that were invented by the video game industry to just explain things in science and healthcare.
Cool.
And reality. So,
so it's all about explaining things. It's all about, you know, transmitting information and knowledge that people didn't have, and using virtual reality as like a good tool.
Yeah.
Better than you could with any other thing.
Definitely. Right? And one thing that people don't think about is that the body itself is this amazing three-dimensional machine, and it's a machine within that contains many other machines.
Right.
And so if you fly inside it and look at the heart or the brain or any of the other organs, there's these amazing things that, who knows who made them? I don't know. We don't have to get into that. But I mean, being able to see them from all sides and see the mechanics of them and understand the science of them lends itself very well to visual, three-dimensional, virtual, being there, touching right. it, interacting with it.
Cool. David, I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, on the medical side, what kind of advancements are there has this been being perceived well?
Yeah, so the response we've gotten from the medical community, both from the trainees, from the hospital administration, from patients and families, has been amazing. And I think that's just because we as a community, as a medical community, and as a kind of medical scientific community with education as well, are really just starting to see kind of the very beginnings of what VR can actually do. And, you know, we have a long history in medicine of education and, you know, training people with some of the most difficult concepts to visualize and understand in your head.
Right.
But it's all been relatively static, things that you can't really immerse yourself in, you know, modalities that are either flat or are, you know, teaching methods that you can't really interact with. The closest we get probably has been historically the human cadaver experience, which really all medical students do, and which is, you know, a profound learning kind of experience.
Right.
But we've used our VR heart to really describe what I think is the most complex organ system, and the really most difficult to understand and visualize in your head, these congenital abnormalities that babies are born with, and have just had an amazing response from trainees and families alike. So it's been really exciting.
So I don't know if we gave a proper introduction into what Heart VR actually is. Do you wanna kind of explain what it is and where it fits within, you know, medicine? Is it at the, you know, something that the consumers have and learning, or it's something that doctors are using?
Well, we started it to be an educational experience to teach about a very specific field in medicine, which David is a specialist in, and that's congenital heart defects. Okay. And that means that it's congenital heart disease as opposed to adult heart disease. And heart disease, we think of it as coronary artery disease and things that adults have. Maybe David can explain it better than I can.
Yeah, so, you know, I think when people hear heart disease, or they think about, you know, the American Heart Association, for example, they think about people having heart attacks, which is relatively common. But not quite as difficult to conceptualize in your head. from a 3D standpoint. What I'm a specialist in, and kind of the way that we got linked up is with congenital heart defects, which are, like I said, defects that babies are born with. And just because the way that the heart forms in utero, you know, as a fetus is growing, the way that the heart forms and folds is really complicated. It's this amazing origami type folding of this tissue.
And you need cross sections in textbooks to really look at them, right? That's how I learned.
Yeah, you need cross sections. There are other representations that try to get 2D images into 3D. But basically what we end up having to teach trainees that work with us, and they work for years and years to understand this, is we take all of these modalities and then make the trainee form a 3D image in their brain so that they can they can visualize this in their head. And what we think we're doing, and we've had some great feedback on this, is really accelerating that process and allowing people to interact with these 3D structures right in front of them.
Awesome.
So it becomes a way to both teach medical students, doctors, nurses, everybody that's involved in these complicated cases that involve babies, and to understand what's going on inside the heart. And the baby hearts are often the size of a plum or smaller. So to be able to project yourself inside and look from the inside, if there's a hole or a vessel isn't working, it's just a new way to be able to have visual, kind of physical access to these three-dimensional concepts.
Right. Is this something that can be like personalized to the patient themselves, where like, you know, I'm sure not two people have the same defect, right, in the same way. Is that something that's possible, or where are we with that? Because I know there's a lot that's going down the personalization route. And before that, by the way, for live viewers, write down your questions. I know you guys are, a lot of people are interested in, you know, learning a little bit more about this. Every 15 minutes or so, we'll stop and do a little live Q&A, take your guys' comments and questions. So yeah, go ahead.
So there's different ways to think about it. The way that we're approaching it is more like the way that you learn from a textbook. And I mean, we think we're doing better than a textbook, but it's like in a textbook, you have a standard visualization and sort of generic, but you can teach a lot of different details about how things work from, you know, a standardized way of approaching it. And then on the other side, there's the more clinical approach where you would base it on a scan that of the patient's own heart.
Right.
But there's some limitations to that, which is that the scan can be lower resolution because it is actually a function of how much radiation they're exposed to.
Sure.
So the more radiation, the higher resolution. It's not that great of a bargain for getting a high resolution scans.
You just blast them with basically radiation.
Yeah. So that's one of the limitations on using people's own heart. But that like many technologies will evolve, and it'll be less radiation, you'll be able to get higher resolution. But the other thing is when you take a high res scan, it's just static. It's a static heart. So our heart beats, and there's blood flowing through it, and it's
how
alive.
How do you stop it? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, with the static models, it's just, you'll see sort of like what looks like a plastic heart. It'll be one freeze frame of your heart in kind of lower resolution. So it's not as interesting to look at yet. And that's the advantage of being able to actually build using, you know, CG, build a more general heart that is highly detailed and highly accurate, but it's not your heart quite yet.
Right. Maybe you can change that general heart into match. I mean, if you know certain things about the person's heart, maybe you can match it in the model that you have already rather than try to recreate it.
That's right.
It's actually relatively versatile. So you can take, you know, a relatively uniform, for example, type of hole in the heart. And first of all, it's much more versatile if you have that relatively uniform one to teach all of the trainees about that type of hole in the heart. And then you can go to patients and say, this is a representation of the hole in the heart. Your child's hole, actually, this part here is a little bit different or smaller on that side. But the general concepts are exactly the same. Once you create that patient's specific heart, they can get so complicated that may be useful for only that patient.
Right.
And so it doesn't quite translate as much for educating kind of the broader medical community. But as the technology improves, I think, you know, that's something that we'll see come down the road.
Is this going to be something that consumers with, you know, a Rift or a Vive or whatnot be able to download, or what's the plan over like launch schedule with this?
Yeah, we want to share some version of it so that people can just get a glimpse of, you know, what VR and medicine is going to mean and how it's going to be used. And then it could be like there's a consumer version that's the normal heart, so that you can learn about the normal heart. And then, you know, sort of a professional version that has 30 different kinds of defects and lots of detail that a consumer might not want because it's sort of more science level.
Right.
But the other thing that we're starting to think about now is going beyond just a reference tool, where it's not just an encyclopedia of heart defects, but it can start to become an actual learning experience where, you know, you could see it being used at medical schools so that medical students would actually go through, and it's like going through a chapter of a textbook, except you're operating the heart and learning about it by manipulating it and, you know, pointing to different pieces of it to be tested. And so it's like a course in virtual reality.
Like an interactive educational experience inside the heart rather than reading a chapter on holes in the heart.
Right. I want to say, we can do a Q&A now. How can people find more about Heart VR? If they want to talk to you.
Well, let's see. There's a website, and I believe it's vrheart.stanford.edu.
Yeah, you can look up this. If you look up Stanford Children's Virtual Reality Heart, that'll come up.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Someone's asking about a demo video online. Yes, there is. Look up Heart VR Stanford on YouTube. That's the queries I use. And it'll come up. Or is there a different title?
You've got to see this video. This is Oz's video, and it's so cool.
If I have moderators in the chat, please try and find it and post it for people.
Can we brag for a second about this thing that you helped us do, which was that we think it's, if not the first, one of the first few mixed reality videos with the Rift.
For the
featuring
Rift?
The Rift.
That was cool.
A lot of the MR videos you see are with the Vive, and so we sort of hacked together a way to do it with
that
the Rift,
and
it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I got to thank the community. I got a couple trips from here and there, and basically came together into a pretty cool trailer. You're like one of the first to actually do it in real time rather than, you know, fake it in post.
Yeah.
Like this was an actual game running with Rift with a fake third controller with like touches and things. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, medical VR and where we are in the field, or where just VR is with doctors. Like, I'm guessing 99% of them haven't tried it, right? And so when you come in with an idea like this, you're like, hey, you know, I want to try virtual reality for this and that. Like, what is the response that you get, and how have you dealt with those?
Yeah, so I think the medical community in general, I think, is really poised to start interacting with VR a lot more in the next few months and few years, for sure. I think the community is really excited about it when people see what we think are better ways to learn and teach and to explain to patients, which we've actually done that as well, explain to people what heart defects are. People get really excited. It's probably, there haven't been as many medical people using VR as, you know, in other groups, but I think that for sure is going to change. It's going to be part of our everyday life. When we went to them with the idea, and I mean, you know, to our medical community, our heart center at Stanford.
You have to do much convincing to get him on board at first?
He got me on board.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah. We had done a project a couple years ago for the Stanford Heart Center that was an iPad sort of simulation.
Okay.
And David saw that and said, can we do this in VR?
Awesome. So you're really thinking ahead and how are you going to use different technologies in your field?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I like to think of it that way. But it was easy because, you know, I work primarily in the intensive care unit at the Children's Hospital at Stanford. And so we have patients, you know, I'm lucky in that I work in a heart center that's world class, world renowned. I get to work with an amazing team.
Right.
And we take care of patients, and we have trainees from literally all over the world. It's not uncommon for us to have kids come from Poland to have surgery and medical care at our centers, which is amazing.
Wow. So have you thought, and this is a question actually, have you thought about localization and, you know, supporting different languages for these applications?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, certainly for us here, we need to have this in Spanish. There's no question about that.
Especially in California.
Especially in California. My medical Spanish is pretty good. I know how to say hole and murmur and, you know, and a number of other things. I think there's such a vast community of all different languages that need to know this information that, right, I think for sure that's in our next step. That's already being built.
And to your earlier question about what's the response in the medical community, we were at a cardiology conference in December with pediatric cardiologists from around the world. And we had a booth there, and there was a line to the booth, and people from all over the world were coming up and trying it. And these are people that had never seen VR before. So there's obviously always a wow factor of the first time you see VR. It's kind of amazing no matter what.
Right.
But they also, once that sort of wore off, they were able to see immediately the educational value. And people would say stuff like, I wish they had this when I was in medical school, or this is going to be allow us to train so much more effectively.
Right.
This is going to revolutionize the way that we teach. So there's a huge amount of enthusiasm about the potential for it. And I think that's true all across VR. But the challenge that we have now is, how do you take that enthusiasm and convert it into actual, you know, use and getting it in hospitals?
What do you want that to be? What is that use? I mean, ultimately with VR in this sense.
Well, you want people to learn everything that you can teach about medicine. Not everything, because you need to, you know, if you're doing surgery, you need an
actual
body.
Still needs to have a job, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But there's so many, there's so many concepts that you can teach by letting people go inside the body and learning by doing.
Right.
And so we want it to be part of medical school education, part of, if you're getting a job at a hospital and presiding over these cases or being involved in these cases, then you go to the VR room at the hospital and take a course in VR, or do it, you know, at home before you get there. And so it just becomes part of how people learn.
I like that. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what's been impressing you in the field. I mean, I don't know too much about medical VR. What is out there, and what are some ideas that, you know, you don't have time to do, but you're like, wow, that's a great idea. I'm glad someone's doing that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of, certainly some of the technological advances that are going to allow us to build our current program in a little bit of a different environment are pretty impressive. So, for example, multi-user. Mm-hmm. You know, I think at some point, we're already kind of thinking about developing, and we're kind of moving toward, you know, a medical school classroom where there's 30 students, where, you know, either in VR or AR, where they're learning, you know, our Stanford Virtual Heart, but it's 30 people at one time and different people interacting. And, you know, I think that's just going to be so much more of an advance for, you know, training medical students versus what I had when I was in medical school, which was, you're sitting in a lecture hall and they put up a slide that's black and white, and they show you pictures of the heart, and you kind of look at them and memorize them.
Cool.
Some of the stuff that people are doing, and I don't know the names of all the companies, but they are actually starting to try to teach surgery and the tricky thing about that is, in regular VR, you can't do that because you need the pressure and the force and the resistance of a body. But there's a couple companies that are trying to actually build these interactive mannequins where you can press in VR a scalpel into a dummy and then see the virtual version of the surgery as you're doing it. And that's a tricky hardware design proposal, but that's certainly going to be how people are going to learn in the future.
Hey, just put some Vive trackers on it, right? And it'll work.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's what developers do.
Slap the tracker on there.
That's really cool. I like the ability to mix in, you know, the real life elements and tools that, or even, you know, you don't have to reinvent the entire wheel if you can borrow tools from other parts of education that work really well, like, you know, fake bodies and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then use new technologies like VR and actually augment both the technologies together.
Definitely.
And I'm not using augment in a AR way.
The regular way.
God, these words have now just become so, you have to, like, ingrained. You can't use them in different ways.
There's another sort of pillar of what people are trying to do in medicine, which is using VR for empathy. And so,
why is that relevant for medicine?
Well, because, Dr. Axelrod can maybe help me out with this, but for instance, at children's hospitals, there's a lot of kids coming in. They don't know what to expect. They're worried. They know that they have a condition. They may have to go into surgery, and that can freak kids and parents out. So being able to give a kid a preview of what the OR looks like or what the hospital looks like, so that they're not surprised the first time they actually get there, that's a way to, you know, sort of prepare them and get them in a calmer place so that they're not surprised or scared when they get in there. And there's some cool projects at Stanford that are trying to do that.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, can you name a few, or are they?
Yeah, so our group, you know, at Stanford, we have a number of different groups in different fields that are working with VR, AR, 3D printing. And that's kind of part of the fun of being there, is that it's this really forward thinking group. And so one of the projects is called Braveheart. And that's the project where, say, if a child's coming in for a procedure on a Thursday that they've never had before, you know, that can be really anxiety producing. And actually, that anxiety itself can alter the procedure and make it harder for the physicians to be able to do the procedure that they need to do. And so not only for, you know, obviously caring for the child to make the child feel more comfortable and the family, but also to be able to do the procedure in a safer, easier, quicker, hopefully less, you know, costly manner, all of which those things are going to be studied with the Braveheart program. So they would say, give the child the experience of coming through the catheterization laboratory or the rest of the hospital on a Wednesday, and then they would kind of be prepared and then come in on a Thursday for the real thing. And so that's one of the things that the group at Stanford is working on. And that's, you know, pretty exciting.
That's awesome. I mean, are there any kind of numbers that we can, that you've seen that is impressing you about that? Because I think training is, and I keep coming back to it, but training probably has the biggest potential to change in and outside of medicine. Anything that includes, you know, understanding spatial things, understanding muscle memory, and, you know, having those procedures very much ingrained in your brain. Being able to practice those beforehand it gives you a huge advantage. And so have you seen any kind of numbers that you can kind of talk about?
In terms of research?
In terms of, research or even smaller, not real research, you know, anecdotal type of evidence that leads to VR being used by.
We did, or a group at Stanford used this virtual heart and ran some physician assistant trainees through it. Mm-hmm. And asked them questions of sort of fact-based questions about what part of the heart is this or what happens here anatomically, as well as a self-evaluation where they said, how did you like this compared to the other ways that you've learned about anatomy, like textbooks, online videos, diagrams.
Cadavers.
Yeah. Mm. And so it'd be cool if we had the slide to show you, but VR was in the 90th percentile. It was like everybody likes VR more than all the other stuff.
Right.
And so that was kind of a heartening result.
That's cool, yeah.
And also the students were able to learn the anatomic and physiologic questions that they were asked. So we had pre-tests and post-tests. This is all preliminary, and it's going to kind of be presented more broadly and then published through the peer review process.
Sure. That's awesome that you guys are going down the research route.
I think it's really important. I think, I think, we're not in this just to have, a cool heart game that is kind of like cool and fun. We think it is that, but it's really so much more. And so it's on us to prove that actually this is as good or better than the standard medical school curriculum. And we think that it is. And that's what we're developing right now, is the whole curriculum to really be able to show that.
So eventually, do you want this to be basically part of medical school? Is that kind of the target that you're eventually going to?
Yeah, because if you go to a medical school class on anatomy now, you'll see a bunch of people, maybe 50 people sitting in a big room looking at what is essentially a 2D diagram up on the screen of a body. And it's sort of almost like an outline and very, very simplified. And it's really easy to imagine not too far in the future where everybody has their AR glasses on and they're all looking at a 3D AR projection of a living human body, and the professor taps the brain and the brain flies up and you can rotate it and zoom in and go to whatever part you want, and this region of the brain does this and this region of the heart does that. And so it's in addition to being a cool an effective way to teach all these anatomical parts in three dimensions, we think it'll just be really engaging because it's you're not just writing on pen and paper. You get to touch and interact with the anatomy that's a living body that's in front of you.
That's awesome.
The other group we think as well that, I've had experience with the VR heart is with patients and families. And so that's been really impressive. And so, the standard kind of way that that we educate families when they come in to our heart center, if they have a baby that has a congenital heart defect that needs surgery, honestly, is we go up to a whiteboard and, we draw them a heart. or we draw it on a piece of paper. And I'm pretty good at drawing. I'm, you know, I've been doing it for a while. So you kind of learn how to draw it so that it's okay.
Right.
And then, you know, these families keep these papers, they laminate them, they keep them. For this one mother that we had with us the other day, she had her son that's my patient, and he was in the VR experience, or she was in the VR experience, and just, you know, learning about the heart. And she had brought these papers that were from 5 years before when we had drawn these pictures for her. And, you know, and I think that there's just such a better way to educate families about what's going on. And I think that's really important for them, for their own healthcare. And so that's also something we want to look at.
And the heart conditions are both complicated, and you can't see them because it's inside your body. So we've had parents of patients look at some of the educational visualizations that we've done and say, my child got that surgery 10 years ago, and I didn't understand what it was until now, until I looked at this.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to them, it was just another, you know, three-letter acronym disease.
So that's what I was saying when we have these patients coming from all over the world. I was saying a little bit before, and, you know, they'll come into our intensive care unit and say, hey, you know, I used this online educational tool that was on the Stanford website. It was incredible. You know, it was, thank you so much. So then I text David and I say, hey, you know, we got another kid from Texas or a kid from Florida. You know, they came in, they used the app, you know, great
work.
You
know, it's funny because you're using virtual reality, but at the end, it's all about it places them back into reality, and it makes them understand what is happening in reality inside of the heart, right? Like, it's not something foreign. It's not a three-letter disease. It's oh, there it is. That's a big hole in the heart that, you know, that's what they're trying to fix.
And that,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And this gets to kind of a concept we were playing around with the other day, which is the heartbeat. And we all know we have heartbeats. We all know ba-dum, ba-dum, lub-dub, lub-dub. But there's actually a complicated process that goes into what is happening every time the heart beats. And there's a couple of valves that close for the first part of the beat, and then a couple more that open and close for the second part of the beat.
Right.
And if you're inside the heart and you can see the first two close, and then the second two close, then suddenly that noise that you're hearing through the stethoscope makes sense, because you can see all the pieces beat and close at the same time. So the heartbeat becomes not abstract, but real, like you're saying.
It's a spatial thing. You can understand where it's actually happening.
You can see it happening.
That's a great point. That's cool. I'm glad you guys are working on such interesting new tech. The beeps and boops and that are coming from the table, those are just new followers. So if you guys are first time watching this show on whatever platform we're on, I'll just say a little something about Upload. We cover all things virtual reality, and today we're kind of talking about medicine and about using VR and how you can use it as a visualizing method, both as a patient and also as a medical expert of all kinds. Awesome, guys. I mean, I want people to be able to reach out to you. How can people find both Lighthouse and, I guess, your team at Stanford?
Well, Lighthouse's URL is LIGHTHAUS, German spelling of house, .us.
Ah.
And you can check out some of the work, and there's a contact form. But definitely, I highly recommend it. I know I keep saying this. Check out the MR trailer that Oz produced, because it has contact information, and it also gives you a very cool visual of what the project is and sort of what the vision for it is. So
that's cool. I just, we've pinned in the Facebook stream the Stanford Hospital website. So in here, I'm sure there's a trailer.
And you can also just Google Stanford Virtual Heart, and it'll pop up on YouTube.
That's right. Yeah. One last questions, guys. If people want to ask them now, now's the time. John D. Glover is asking, can this be adapted to a live feed? And kind of asking about how you can use this to be working together in real time, where I'm guessing he's thinking someone is inside of the heart, you know, kind of there at small scale, and someone's outside that they're communicating. I think telepresence has a lot of potential. I'd love to get some of your thoughts as to, you know, how that can be integrated. I don't know if that's something that HeartVR wants to do, but where do you see this going?
Well, it's just like, once again, borrowing concepts from the video game industry. Make it multiplayer.
Right.
So multiple people can be in it. If it's a doctor and a patient, or a doctor and a family, or multiple medical students, or a high school teacher and students, and as many people as you want can join, you know, once you add the multiplayer functionality. So everything is better with more people. And yeah, it could definitely. So telemedicine is actually a concept that's gaining currency.
Yeah, I think one of the fascinating ideas that we've talked about with our surgeons is actually doing telemedical remote surgical consults. So, you know, for example, if we have that patient who's in Texas or in Florida and they're coming for surgery next week, you know, we've had our surgeons in the VR heart, in the Stanford heart, and they've, you know, had just great things to say about it. So to have them in the Stanford heart with the patient who's in it saying, this is the plan for next week, that's something that I don't think that's that far away. I think we're pretty close to that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us here on another episode of the Research VR podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this has been a pleasure. Oz. This has been really fun. Everybody, thank you for watching and listening in live and after the fact. If you are new to this, follow at Research VR. We just talk about science and virtual reality. Follow Lighthouse Inc. And do you guys have personal plugs you want to put in there?
Yeah, you can follow at dsarno, D-S-A-R-N-O, if you want, on Twitter.
Awesome.
You can email me at dxarad@stanford.edu. I also want to say hi. Can I say hi to my kids?
Yeah, say hi.
Dr. J, the Worm, and Tiny Archibald.
Oh, I like those names. Yeah. Cool. I'll shout out to my dad for making this intro song. He makes all the intro songs for uploads all the live streams. Yeah,
this
cool
is
stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, it's funky. It's a nice little groove out. Yeah.
Hip dad.
He's a cool guy. All right, everybody. Thank you again, and we'll see you next week.